News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. And by Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
'Tis the top of the second hour. We're going to start like we normally do with an El Paso History Moment, produced and written by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. And her topic today is about the 1881 El Paso gunfight called Four Dead in 5 Seconds. One, two, three, four.
The bodies of two Mexican vaqueros recently murdered were brought to El Paso. An inquest was held in the Justice of Peace office located in the vicinity of present-day Camino Real Hotel. 75 riders from Mexico charge up and down El Paso Street demanding justice. When the inquest is terminated, the vaqueros ride back across the Rio Grande in Mexico carrying the bodies of their dead compadres. Out on the street, former city marshal George Campbell is arguing with Gus Kremkow, constable and former Texas Ranger, about the dead vaqueros and their compadres. Disgusted, Campbell turns to mount his horse when his friend Johnny Hale screams, "I'll take care of this for you, George." Then Johnny shoots Kremkow. Marshal Dallas Stoudemire, crossing the street to grab a bite to eat, hears the gunshots, turns, and runs, firing his 6 guns, accidentally killing an innocent peanut vendor. Dallas then turns the guns on Johnny Hale and George Campbell. Johnny dies instantly, and George, mortally wounded, cries out, "It's not my fight." When the dust clears, 4 men are dead, all killed in 5 seconds.
More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
A lot going on there. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Remember when we did the video, where we did the movie, and I remember a lot of people didn't think that that was possible, that people could do it. And we actually, you put the timer
put
into
timer
the video.
Up there and said they did it.
Yeah.
They actually did it. And we didn't do it on site to a clock.
No.
It just happened that way.
It came out perfectly. It was amazing.
And we had film from 1895.
Yes,
no,
yes.
It was. No, 1881 in that case.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't.
Yes, I felt like it after you got done with it. But it was a great event. But we cannot forget other people who are really involved in our El Paso history and the region. And that's Remember an El Paso Win, which is managed by Barbara Given Bainey. You have El Paso History Alliance, which is Max Grossman and his crew over there.
And we're streaming live everywhere.
Yeah, and between the two of them, they've got over 100,000 followers. So it's a pretty good... People are interested in El Paso.
And good old BGB, Barbara Given Bainey. She's the owner and chief administrator of that Remember an El Paso Win. Great archive stuff in there. And Margaret Smith, Rick Duncan, Paul Louis, Jim Carrollton, administrators and moderator Ken Weiss, and Craig Hayes. A lot going on there. All right, back to the idea of gunfights in the Old West, so to speak. And, Sam, you probably don't know this, but that was the name of the video we turned out 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And we did that with this crowd, 6 Guns and Shady Ladies. And we did all gunfights all over town. And then we found an old West-looking dinner theater. And we went in there, and it hadn't been used in a while. There were still potatoes in the oven.
Oh, God.
It was so
horrible.
Strange. We cleaned it up a little bit.
It actually was kind of like what it might have been back in
yes.
the old days, actually.
I mean, it was a weird, dusty place. And so I decided, well, we put up one light only, and just blew the place out with it. So it was all kind of shadowy. You know, we put John Wesley Harden.
I kept saying, Hunta virus.
Yeah. Well, back then. But anyway, so we did that gunfight in 4 seconds, five seconds, before it did. And it was an interesting thing. And then we did John Wesley Harden in the bar. And it was an interesting thing to go through all that. So where do you want to go now? You got you got Fusselman next, it looks like.
Yeah, the slaying of Charles Fusselman looms pretty large in my book. It comes up a couple of times because there was a very lengthy sort of pursuit for Fusselman's killers, two of whom were eventually brought to justice there in El Paso about 10 years after Fusselman was killed. But Charles Fusselman was a Texas Ranger in Company D of the Frontier Battalion. He was also a deputy United States Marshal. He was in El Paso in the spring of 1890 to attend the federal court. a gang of rustlers were sweeping through the area. They had stolen a bunch of livestock, horses primarily, from some area ranches. Fusselman and two other lawmen, or one other lawman, George Harold, who was a longtime police officer in El Paso and somebody I discuss at length, and a former Texas Ranger, he accompanied Fusselman and one of these ranchers out into the Franklin Mountains, where they eventually were ambushed by the gang they were after. Fusselman was, of course, killed, and the outlaws escaped. And years later, two of them were eventually brought to justice, tried in El Paso, and one of them was hanged in early 1900. So it took about 10 years to bring these guys to justice.
Well, that canyon is very famous because they put Trans Mountain Road through it. It was just an interesting smuggler's canyon, but they used to smuggle the cattle up and over the mountain, and that was the lowest place they could do it. And that V has now been cut another, I guess, probably 150 feet. So you can smuggle cattle over that mountain real easy now in a truck. But the trails there, you can still see the trails. Now, the picture we have up is Fusselman Canyon from the east side. But on the west side, we don't have a picture of that one. But on the west side, you can still see the trails where they used to bring the cattle down. And they're very high up there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine doing that? And they did that to avoid El Paso. It's an amazing thing. And so Fusselman just went running after these people. And, of course, there's an historic marker there now that is on the – that's kind of up at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, it's a historic sign. Talks about it.
The Texas State Historic Marker. So Fusselman Canyon, there that is. You want to move on to something else, or you got another thought there?
No, we can certainly move on.
Let me just take it aside here real quick, Sam.
That killing sort of defines the second chapter of the book and sort of kicks off the 1890s. Most of the book covers the 1890s, which was sort of a golden age of gunfighters in El Paso, Texas.
And
where you had a lot of your well-known characters come and go from town. John Selman, John Wesley Hardin, Jeff Milton, George Scarborough, people like that.
Well, who was Captain Jones?
Captain Frank Jones was the commander of Company D of the Texas Rangers. And there was so much lawlessness around the sort of outlying areas of El Paso in the early 1890s that the people called for the Rangers to come back to El Paso County. And so Jones and his company relocated to El Paso County. And a few days afterwards, Jones was killed at a place called Pirate Island, as it was known at the time. Obviously well downriver from El Paso. And that was a pretty sensational event. The river had a way of changing course, which made the boundary sometimes hard to distinguish. So Pirate Island was an area that was on the other side of the river that was still Texas territory. And so the actual international boundary was just sort of an invisible line running through the brush and the sand. And Jones, in pursuing a couple of members of a bandit gang with several of his rangers, they were sort of led into an ambush. And Jones was killed down there. There were a lot of other shootouts in that area over the years. Some of them I covered in my first book, Cowboys and Gangsters, during the Prohibition era. That area became very popular with rum runners and people bringing liquor across the border.
Yeah, for a lot of people that don't know what Pirates Island is, we refer to it many times as being La Isla.
Isla,
and
yeah.
And that one always goes, oh, we know where that is.
Well, one of the problems was that the lawmen didn't know if they had jurisdiction or not. So if they went in there, they were taking their life in their own hands.
Am I in Mexico or am I in the
United
States?
And because it was an island, and the Treaty of Guadalupe said the deepest channel, the center of the deepest channel would be the boundary. Well, it was the north part for a while. It was the south part for a while. Then the north part dried up. And all of a sudden, this great land in South County of El Paso turned into to be America. And a lot of the people in Mexico had great holdings in there. And they were not happy about that, but they lost them. U.S. sent some forces in and said, it's ours now. And that, you know, ultimately settled in the Treaty of Chamizal in 1960. So there's a quick history on that. But
yeah,
that,
you actually had a couple of these islands. You know, you're right. One of them being Cordova Island.
That's the Chamizal. Yeah.
Yeah, that became a real popular haunt for bootleggers during the 1920s. So many gunfights down there with members of the Customs Service and the Border Patrol in the 1920s and 30s.
Well, there were people that grew up there in the houses that were on Chamizal, and they wouldn't let their kids play on the south side of the house because there were bullet holes all through the through the house. The kids had to play on the, I'm serious. The kids had to play on the north side of the house. They get shot. You know, strange.
It's funny that a lot of people have forgotten about these islands. I mentioned Cordova Island at one point, I think on my Facebook page. This was after my first book was published, and somebody wrote, I've lived in El Paso all my life. There's no island in town, and I had to kind of explain sort of jurisdictional island, this sort of intentional rerouting of the river and everything.
Well, it's now in concrete. It's not going to happen again. But the whole history there is for very real, and a lot of people I knew that left. And what the thing was, the U.S. government did a smart thing. They paid the people the highest estimate, and when they went to buy their houses, they got a couple of estimates on what the house was worth. They paid the highest one. So all of a sudden, people leaving there were not so upset. They were upset to be uprooted in their neighborhood. But, well, okay, you're going to pay for it? Okay. And that's how that kind of like went down.
Yeah. It's just an amazing area. What we're referring to now, the Chamizal or Cordova Island, that was just absolutely incredible land down there. It was excellent farming land and such. And so people were really disappointed when they had to leave.
Now it's a huge park on both sides of the river.
Mm-hmm. That was part of the
agreement. And the trees grow really well, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. we got time before the break for one more. Oh, this is a biggie. Selman Hardin Scarborough. My goodness.
Yeah, the sort of middle portion of my book, for a couple of chapters, I deal quite a bit with John Wesley Hardin. It was important to me for readers to understand I wasn't writing another John Wesley Hardin book. I more or less wanted to place Hardin kind of in this larger drama of law and order in El Paso. But Hardin, of course, arrived in early 1895. He was in El Paso for just a short number of months before he was killed, of course. He clashed with just about everybody he came into contact with, one of those people obviously being John Selman, who was the constable of Precinct 1 at the time. He was a person with a very shady background. Prior to coming to El Paso, he'd been a fugitive from justice for quite a while. Came to El Paso in the late 1880s, sort of kind of redeemed himself, if you will. Worked for the Customs Service for a while in the police force, then became constable. And that's the job he held when Hardin got to town. And, of course, Selman is best remembered now for having killed Hardin at the Acme in August of 1895. But I do talk quite a bit about Hardin and some of the other people that sort of were part of his orbit there. George Scarborough was the deputy U.S. Marshal working out of El Paso at the time. His friend Jeff Milton was chief of police. Jeff Milton is really one of the great lawmen of the American Southwest. He had such a long career, and he spent several months in El Paso. So a couple of chapters there deal with these guys, Milton, Scarborough, Hardin, Selman, who are all interacting and variously colliding with one another, often with very violent results.
Interesting things you have in your book. The name of the book is Hell, H-E-L-L, Paso, and there's a reason for that. It's historic, and it's also, I presume you explain that in the book, Sam Dolan.
Yes, that's right. The name Hell Paso, newspapers started referring to El Paso as Hell Paso during the Salt War. Some of the old-timers would occasionally refer to it as Hell Paso as well.
Oh, yeah.
Solomon Schutz did years later in an interview. You know, he said back then the town was known as Hell Paso, and it was a name well-earned because of all of the violence that occurred there.
A lot to it. All right, we've got, actually, what's that picture? We got, that's coming up next. We got a couple more pictures to show you.
Yeah.
But we got to take another break here.
I want to hear about the Halloween shootout.
Oh, this is going to...
Trick or treat.
There's
have some lead.
A whole bunch more stuff coming here. And I think we're going to hear from John Wesley Hardin's girlfriend at some point. She's going to call in.
Oh, jeez. Beulah. Beulah, that woman.
Beulah
Morose
may call us. You never know. But we're going to take a break here and come back. We're looking at the Facebook. We're looking at the email. Email is ephistory690@gmail.com. Nobody on there yet. But you got more comments there, don't you?
Yeah, a lot of comments. We had a gentleman, and his name's Meter. He was driving around in his truck, and he just happened to check channels and ran into our show. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guy.
You know,
welcome here. We do this once a week, every week, and it's at 10 to noon on Saturday. So.
Yeah. We had a question about where La Isla, that was from Irma Batista. You know, she was asking where it is now.
Well, at one point,
it's not really there, but it's down from Fabens. Vince corrected me.
Well, at one point, it included all the way from Isleta. And Socorro were in part of the island at one point, and then the river decided to make it different, and that the river made a mess out of people's lives back in the day.
It flooded all the time. So.
Yeah, it took down two of those missions at least. The one in Socorro, one in Isleta, both got damaged heavily, and I think the one in the church there in Santa Lazaria got damaged as well. Anyway, a lot of history there. Be sure to be taking a break back in a moment. Call us if you need to.
915-544-5876 or 915-544-5876. KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the Juan and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
This is Andrew J. Polk with News Radio 690 KTSM. Overall cases of the COVID-19 coronavirus are dropping in our community, and hospitalizations continue to fall as well, but the spread of the disease is not gone. To stay safe these holidays, consider these simple steps for the Department of Public Health. Wash your hands often, don't touch your face, stay 6 feet apart, and wear a mask when around others outside of your household. Find more information on this and free testing for the coronavirus at epstrong.org. From the News Radio 690 KTSM News Desk, I'm Andrew J. Polk.
Your business is getting back to business, but things are a little different than 6 months ago. What does that mean for your customers? And when things are constantly changing, how do you know you're making the right decisions? What you need is Research Raccoon. Research Raccoon is the easy way to learn about your customers, and it's affordable for businesses of all sizes. Here's how it works. Ask a question, and Research Raccoon polls a U.S.-based group of people to find out what they think. No having to define an audience or waiting weeks for results, just data to make smarter decisions. Think of it like a gut check for your plan to re-enter the market. That way, your first move is your best move. So before you reopen your store, reach out to your customers, or introduce yourself to a new audience, talk to Research Raccoon and get data you can use for less than you'd think. Visit ResearchRaccoon.com to learn more and discover which plan is best for you. ResearchRaccoon.com. A little gut check for your big ideas.
From UFOs to government conspiracies, the world is full of the stuff they don't want you to know.
Here's where it gets crazy.
If you found a GPS device on your vehicle, would you remove it or would you just leave it there?
No, you put it on another vehicle. That's obvious.
Each episode dives deep into the world's strangest topics, from hidden history to the bleeding edges of science and beyond. Listen to Stuff They Don't Want You to Know on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Season's greetings from Stifel. My name is Ron Kruszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel Financial, headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri. On behalf of our more than 8,500 employees across the globe, may the spirit of the season warm you and your loved ones. My wish for our nation is to focus on the things that unite us. Let us be thankful for the many blessings that connect us to each other. Wishing you peace and prosperity in the new year. Season's greetings to you and yours from Stifel.
Newsmax TV. Everyone's talking about it. 30 million people are watching Newsmax for real news on President Trump, Biden, the election, and more. And make sure you vote in Newsmax's national poll asking if President Trump should concede. Just text VIRUS to 39747 and vote instantly. That's VIRUS to 39747. Watch Newsmax for great shows on major cable systems and free on Roku, YouTube, smart TVs, and more. Vote about Trump. Text VIRUS to 39747 today.
El Paso's News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Got a lot going on here on the radio. We're going to talk to Sam Dolan some more. But we got a bunch of announcements to tell you. We have on January 9th, next week on the radio show, centuries ago, El Paso was a center of the winemaking industry in the New World, even exporting wines to other parts of the Southwest. That tradition lives on at Zin Valle Vineyards, a locally owned and operated winery that offers wines from its estate vineyards as well as from California and Italy.
Italy.
And the history of winemaking in the Paso del Norte region will be explained by Ryan Poulos, co-owner of Zin Valle, along with his father, Vic Poulos, who's an expert on the history of wine in the region. And we recorded Vic 10 years ago explaining this at a conference, and he's a good speaker.
He is good.
So we're going to clip him up, and Ryan will be on live. So, and then January 16th, we got 9 historic districts in the city of El Paso. Bernie Sargent's going to be our guest that day to explain the history of Sunset Heights and what role it now plays in El Paso. So what do you got?
I want to talk about one of my favorite topics. That's Keystone Heritage Park and Desert Botanical Gardens. And, of course, it's been open for the public. We've been trying to keep it open through all this mess so people had a place to go and have some sanity. And they're open Tuesdays through Wednesdays from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And just for this little another week, you're going to be open until 8 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the Christmas lights in the gardens. And so Bernie and I went there for New Year's Eve. We went there because we had to go lock up. It was fun. It was being out there in the dark and looking at the lights and everything. It was beautiful out there that day. And the moon was insane.
I bet it was. Luminarios this year, though, right?
No luminarios. We just couldn't do it with this pandemic mess. But we got a lot of great things coming up this spring. They're located at 4200 Donovan Drive in the Upper Valley. And the phone number is 584-0563. And today, you can go out. Right now, all of our winter visitors, our snowbirds, literally, are down at the lake. We have some great variety of inland gulls that live with us from the Great Salt Lake.
There's a couple hundred of them in that flock.
Yeah, they come down from Montana. And it's amazing. There's tons of birds out
there. Sam sends them down here.
That's right. You go down past Arizona, they come here. But so you can go at 3:30 today. The Audubon Society will be there, help you pick out. And you can walk through the Chihuahuan Desert Experience, which is the larger area where the Keystone Lake is. So you can come down and have a good time and learn a little history, because we've got art and history
Donovan
plaques and everything.
At Frontera.
Right. And it's on the Tierra, Camino Real Tierra Adentro.
If you say so.
If I say so, yes.
You did. Okay. We've got Sam Dolan on the phone here. Sam, we've got Miss Beulah. I'm not sure she's Miss Beulah today, otherwise known as Patricia. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Same to you.
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to thank you for the nice announcement about our True West Award again.
Concordia Cemetery.
And we have thousands, a very few handful of people putting in thousands of hours to make this happen. So we're very, very thrilled with all of our partnerships. But I particularly wanted to invite everyone out today. It's the last day to see the beautiful Christmas holiday wreaths at all of the veterans' graves in the cemetery.
Oh, okay.
They'll be taken down tomorrow, and this is through the partnership of the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association with the Concordia Heritage.
What's the address?
And of course, I might report that John Wesley Hardin did not behave very well over Christmas, but I think we've got him back in line for 2021.
And that's you're speaking as Miss Beulah when you say that.
That's right.
Nice, indeed. Right. And how do you get to this Concordia Cemetery place?
Well, it's right near the Spaghetti Bowl off I-10 West.
Mm-hmm.
And Yandell, it's Copia Exit Yandell, or Yandell, as some folks say.
Candle
and
Handle Yandell.
Our main entrance is there on Yandell.
There you go.
But you can also be sure and check out the Buffalo Soldier Memorial there on Stephen Street near L&J Restaurant.
And that's going on today.
That's right.
Patricia, thank you for what you do for history. Congratulations on the award for Concordia from True West Magazine.
A lot of hard work she
thank
puts
you.
Into
oh, yeah,
that
you're
place.
One of those million-dollar volunteers who gets paid nothing.
She's got to take care of her boyfriend's grave. Come on, you know?
That's true.
John Wesley Harden.
John, look out.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Thanks
he
a lot.
He got a haircut and his face washed for Christmas, so he's happy.
Shave and a haircut. Right. Good luck. Hey, we'll talk to you again. Thanks a lot.
That's a scary thought.
You take her easy. Well, you know, Sam, you see we get involved in all kinds of things here. But that True West Magazine does understand Concordia Cemetery. And you've been, obviously, you've taken the pictures on the gravestones out there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no trip to El Paso for research is complete without a stop at Concordia Cemetery. For anyone that hasn't been there, Concordia Cemetery is just one of the great historic sites in the American Southwest.
It really is.
It really is. There's so much history there, as well as over at Evergreen Cemetery.
Evergreen.
As well, but Concordia Cemetery is just fantastic. There's just so much history there. Not just gunmen, obviously, but. Early pioneers of the community,
sure.
And politicians and figures in the Mexican Revolution. And there's just so much history there. So I would recommend anyone stop and pay a visit there.
Well, once a year, except for 2020, they stand around the graves, about 100 people, and they reenact who was there in first person. Like George Look is a guy we know, and Selman's.
Constable Selman,
and then, and then somebody plays Harden, and they stand there and tell you their own story.
Lady Flo.
And so that's the walk-through history they do on every other year except the 20th of the year 2020. You didn't do it. But anyway, so they'll be back next year, we presume. So that's another thing. Okay, one more break here, and we'll come back with a much longer segment. And Sam Dolan's on the phone here. We got him in from Montana. And you sent those seagulls down, didn't you?
I think so.
Yeah, they come down and stay with us, and then they go back up north where it's nice and cool in the summertime.
We're talking more about the book called Hell Paso. We'll be doing that in just a minute. Should we just take a break and go from there? All right, back in just a moment.
Many retired El Paso area homeowners don't know where to begin when it comes to downsizing and selling their home. Patrick Tuttle and his Legacy Home team follow a proven process to help retired homeowners sell faster and for more money. Call Patrick Tuttle at 915-588-1850 today and get your home sold faster and for more money. That's Patrick Tuttle at 915-588-1850. Call him today.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready. And health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-815-4342. That's 800-815-4342. 800-815-4342.
When it comes to your business, there's a lot of things you know and a few things you want to learn more about fast. If you're looking for an easy and affordable way to get smarter about what your customers are thinking, you need to check out Research Raccoon. Just tell the Research Raccoons whatever your business question is. Maybe it's about a new menu item for a restaurant. Maybe it's finding out what your audience really thinks about your business name. Maybe you don't even know what questions you're supposed to be asking. Let the Research Raccoons know what's on your mind, and they'll poll potential U.S.-based customers that day, giving you clean data you can use to make smarter business decisions for less than you'd think. No matter the size of your business, Research Raccoon gives you the tools to learn at an affordable price. So discover what your business should be doing and move with confidence with Research Raccoon. Visit ResearchRaccoon.com to learn more and discover which plan is best for you. ResearchRaccoon.com. Fast results with big data.
News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, this week, you ready?
Yes,
this
I am.
This week only in El Paso, Inc.
I can't even say it. The president of El Paso Young Black Leaders talks about how the organization is supporting the community, growing up black in El Paso, George Floyd, and many more questions this week in the El Paso Inc.
Also in the Inc., a tech startup founded in a UTEP dorm room has landed a $300,000 investment.
Doom scrolling, quarantini, social distancing, the 20 phrases that define 2020.
El Paso's Business Journal, El Paso Inc. is available for home or business delivery.
To receive El Paso Inc., order it online at elpasoinc.com.
Tomorrow night on ABC 7 Extra. Much has changed since the previous legislative session, like a pandemic. Has El Paso's delegation list of priorities changed? ABC's 7 Extra host Saul Sines asked newly elected State Senator Cesar Blanco and Representative Joe Moody what's at the top of the delegation list on ABC 7's Extra.
Join ABC 7 Extra host Saul Sines at ABC 7 Extra's Sunday nights after ABC 7 at 10.
A lot of ABC 7's going on there. Well, make sure you heard that.
We could sing it.
Where do you think it is? It's on ABC 7.
7. That place.
Okay. Well, anyway, Saul's a good guy.
We got to say good morning or say good day to a gentleman from Australia that's listening to us.
Oh, what? How do you say his name?
Gerard?
Gerard. Well, they would say it Gerard.
Gerard, yes.
Gadiello. Gadiello.
Gadiello. Probably Italian.
He's a French dude. Who knows who
Hello.
He is? Howdy there. He may be from
Good morning, yes.
He could actually be from Northeast El Paso and just saying that.
That's true.
We don't know. No. But anyway, howdy, dude. And, we stirred up people with that Yandel thing.
Does.
It's Handel, Yandel, and Candle. And one of those is right. They're all right. I got lectured on
it's
this.
It's a nice
by people.
Street.
Whatever. it's over there somewhere, and it's part of the Burgess family. And yeah, somebody also said it's pronounced like Handel. So there. I'm not getting into that anymore. We got to talk to Sam Dolan.
We got more
book stuff to talk about. Sam, the book is El Paso, and I presume you're going to sell a few books here because of this radio show. We don't need a commission. Thank you very much. What I want you to do is to do a video on El Paso in one of your travels. Do that.
Well, that'd be great. And I, you know, the next time I come to town, I look forward to meeting you folks in person.
Oh, yeah.
I wish we could have done that this past year.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
We can't have guests in the studio except I think Bernie's the grandfathered in.
But we can meet him outside.
But we can go somewhere else in the meantime. When all this is over, we'll have you in here.
We'll
again.
Have a fire pit in our backyard for him and have it.
Make him dance on the
we've
fire?
We've done that before with other historians where we've all gathered together and chatted, so that'd be a lot of fun.
Did we get past Captain Jones Sling? Did we get in Hardin Scarborough?
I believe we did. You know, one big result of Captain Jones' Sling, and I'll just point this out real quick, is that when Captain Jones was killed, command of his company fell to John Reynolds Hughes, who became captain, and John R. Hughes is one of the great captains in the history of the Texas Rangers, and he was very well known in El Paso during his lifetime. Spent many years there.
The Texas Rangers had to show up quite often out here, apparently. what are you guys doing out there in West Texas? And we don't mean Lubbock. You know, it kills me when people say Lubbock's in West Texas. Oh, my God. That's a perspective thing. Lubbock's never been in West Texas, and neither has Amarillo, for that matter. So enough of that. But to the point of what you've got next here, you've got the Sam Carr, looks like here.
Yeah, Sam Carr was a constable in El Paso. He took on John Selman's old job in the late 1890s. He had been a lawman elsewhere. He'd also struggled over the years with alcoholism, and he had taken what was known as the gold cure at the time. These were these sort of kind of quacky sort of treatments for alcoholics, and apparently didn't work out too well for Sam Carr. And not long after he got elected as the constable of Precinct 1, he went on a bender and went into an El Paso saloon picked a fight with a member of the El Paso police force, and they started shooting at each other, and Carr was killed. And this is one of several of these types of incidents I describe in the book, shootouts between members of different law enforcement agencies within El Paso. This is a very politically charged atmosphere. People owed their jobs on the police force to sort of political alliances. These folks would become rivals. They'd get into fisticuffs and sometimes shootouts. And Carr was not the only peace officer killed in El Paso by another lawman.
Yeah.
All right. You've got another one here. Let's go do one more before the break. We've got one more break coming. The Dwyer brothers and other city cops.
Yeah, the Dwyer brothers, sort of the second half of the book, once we get past John Wesley Hardin, is devoted to a lot of members of the city police force, particularly those that were very politically active. And the Dwyer brothers, particularly Pat Dwyer, his brother Jim Dwyer, these were nephews of Joseph McGoffin. And they were very key members of the Moorhead Bank Gang, the Democratic Party machine there in El Paso in the 1890s. These guys would herd voters to the polls come, you know, every election, sometimes voters from across the river. So there's a bit of election fraud going on at the time.
Yeah.
And they would get into fisticuffs and shootouts with some of their rivals. Pat Dwyer dabbled in the saloon business quite a bit when he wasn't serving as a peace officer. He later served as a legislator. He had quite a long political career. His brother Jim Dwyer held a number of law enforcement jobs in and around El Paso, was involved in several shootouts. So I talk quite a bit about the Dwyers, who have been kind of long overlooked. These were nephews of Joseph McGoffin, who was a pretty good person to be related to, obviously.
D-W-Y-E-R. D-W-Y-E-R is how you say that. How do you spell that?
That's correct, yeah.
What?
I know the spacing's a little off in that old photo, but yeah, D-W-Y-E-R.
Yes. And that's an interesting name. Where'd that name come from? What kind of history would that name have had? Do you any idea?
Dwyer?
You know, they had, sort of like the McGoffin family, they had... Their mother was Joseph McGoffin's sister. They were fluent Spanish speakers, made the Dwyers very handy come election time. They would get a lot of different people to the polls. And so they had sort of this sort of mixed Irish, probably German, and Mexican ancestry. Guys, made a big impact in El Paso locally. This was at a time when the police force derived its salaries from the red light district. Cops did not necessarily want the town to get too cleaned up.
Yeah, it's income.
So they were very politically active.
Interesting.
And they weren't the only ones. Joe Rogers is another one. He was a very politically active lawman. He had actually gone to prison at one point for smuggling opium in the 1890s. It did not prevent him from getting a special commission as a Texas Ranger. or serving as a detective with the El Paso Police Force.
Oh, my.
And he was involved in a number of shooting incidents. And then, of course, you've got Manny Clements. Manny Clements was Hardin's cousin.
Let's get to that in a minute.
I'll let you move on to your break.
We do.
Yeah, these guys are kind of dominate the second half.
Well, you've got 1906 Halloween shootout and Manny Clements murder left. Let's save those for after the break, because I can't wait to hear what that's all about.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And we do need to take a break here. And we can do so. Call us up if you think you need to contribute or have a good question or whatever.
It's 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Monterey Asset Management is proud to sponsor the El Paso History Show. If you're tired of the ups and downs of the stock market, maybe you should invest in real estate. Monterey Asset manages apartments in El Paso and helps investors buy, hold, and sell properties. To learn more about the many benefits and long-term appreciation of investing in real estate, call Certified Property Manager Ray Baca at 915-592-4549. Call Monterey Asset Management to discuss your personal financial needs at 592-4549.
Hi, I'm Nick Jonas, and I'm here to tell you about Think It Up, a new initiative to activate student-powered, teacher-led learning projects. Students and teachers, How can you spark great learning experiences in your classrooms today? Join us at thinkitup.org.
iHeartRadio Earth is here with little tips for a healthier planet. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day, the amount of trash produced in the United States increases by an estimated 25%. When discarded, it can produce greenhouse gases that contribute to a changing climate. This year, try using old newspapers for wrapping or opt for reusable options such as a cloth bag instead. Brought to you by iHeartRadio Earth and the National Environmental Education Foundation. To find more tips for smarter, sustainable living or to take action in your own community, go to iHeartRadio.com/earth.
You know where you were when the Golden State Killer was arrested. You're a moderator on the Zodiac Killer subreddit. But now you're in search of a new challenge. Enter Solve, the hit podcast that puts you at the center of the investigation. Solve is like no other murder mystery podcast. You'll track down killers hiding in plain sight.
You all right?
Yeah, it's just disturbing. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Not like this.
To listen to Solve, download the free iHeartRadio app or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. 90-day money-back guarantee available for finasteride only. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Maybe you've noticed thinning hair. Maybe you're wondering if you'll inherit your dad's bald spot. It doesn't have to be destiny. With Hims, you can get doctor-trusted treatment to tackle your hair loss sent right to your door. Just answer some questions online and get connected with a licensed medical provider to figure out what's right for you. And when you go to forhims.com/growth, you can get that first expert consultation for free. Hims has everything from Luxe Thickening Shampoo to FDA-approved, clinically proven prescription pills to help stop loss and even regrow hair. If prescribed, it's shipped right to you. No waiting weeks for an appointment, no pharmacies, no trying to figure out what actually works alone. Get years of confidence for less than a dollar per day. Get your free visit at forhims.com/growth. If you're not happy with the results in 90 days, Hims can give you a full refund. Go to forhims.com/growth for your free visit. forhims.com/growth.
News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Oh, so much going on. You have an announcement to make, and we can just go back into Sam and talk to Sam.
Yeah, pretty much. I think we need to finish off with Sam here.
Well, Sam is good, and Sam's got this book called El Paso, and if you haven't bought it yet, you should. Barnes & Noble.
People are buying it. They're telling us online that they're buying it as soon as they can get it. So.
Oh, yeah, but they're ordering it. And the thing is, some people already had theirs come in, they've read it, and they've talked about it. But apparently the local Barnes & Noble will be getting some. And if not, hey, you know what? How about 50 people call up Barnes & Noble and say, I want to come get the book, then see what happens.
Yeah,
then
they're like, oh,
now we'll freak out and order a box or two. So, Sam, there you go. We're going to do what we can. Also, Sam, you there's sort of a transition you made between the time frames of the Old West gunfighters and the Prohibition era. That was in your other book, Cowboys and, what was that one?
Cowboys and Gangsters.
Gangsters.
And for anyone that's read that book, they'll probably appreciate the fact that I've got some kind of recurring characters here in the lawmen, Juan Franco and the Australian Billy Smith, who are in my first book. They're also in El Paso. And El Paso sort of ends where the El Paso material in Cowboys and Gangsters sort of picks up in the 1910s and 20s.
You pull in the Border Patrol as they were forming, and that turned out to be a big force because the Border Patrol showed up. And they had all kinds of they had airplanes, I think, at some point. And we got the picture up of your Cowboys and Gangsters there. And that's another book people should take a look at. Oh, we got one more phone call coming in here, it looks like. But the thing about this whole history, you're the guy who's done the research. An out-of-towner dude, come and look at our stuff and say, here's who you are, what you have. And I appreciate you doing that because not too many people, maybe Leon would did it in his day, but not too many people now are researching this kind of thing. And we have an historian from the police department, Harry Kirk, talking about how this is great stuff to hear about old parts of the police department. So that's good stuff. Now, you want to get into the 1906 Halloween shootout. What is that?
That's a often overlooked incident, and it's actually one of the biggest gunfights to happen just in town since the four dead and 5 seconds shootout 25 years earlier. It sprang from a domestic quarrel between Manuel Rodriguez and his wife, Maria. They owned a little cafe known as the Night and Day Restaurant that was sort of adjacent to the popular saloon on 7th Street. And they had a falling out. Maria left town, supposedly, joined her boyfriend, who was a bullfighter in Mexico, for several weeks. And while his wife was out of town, Manuel began an affair with the couple's adopted daughter. Maria came back to town, was not too pleased with Manuel for obvious reasons, and supposedly they were going to dissolve their business and go their separate ways. Unfortunately, a fight broke out between them. Manuel chased Maria out into the street with a little Colt 32 automatic and shot his wife dead right there in broad daylight in front of everybody in the neighborhood there.
Bad form.
And this was in a busy afternoon. A lot of people, you know, on the street, streetcar making its way down towards the bridge. It was just in the middle of broad daylight. Mm-hmm. And George Harold, the same lawman who had been in the shootout with Charles Fusselman years earlier, he came down the street. He and two other police officers, they tried to confront Manuel. Manuel took a couple of shots at Harold, shot Harold in the leg, and then took refuge in his restaurant. In a very short amount of time, just about every lawman in El Paso, the police force, the constables, the sheriff's department, all showed up. They converged on this neighborhood, and you had a pretty big siege open up from the rooftops and the alleys and street corners, everybody taking shots into Manuel's restaurant there.
God.
Manuel reloaded his little automatic pistol, shooting out the windows and the open doorway, taunting the officers. Unfortunately, in such a confined space, the officers didn't know really who they were shooting at or where, and they killed two innocent bystanders. A woman was shot and killed in an adjacent rooming house. A young boy was mortally wounded by a bullet that passed through the popular saloon. But just about everybody that wore a badge in El Paso participated in this gunfight, which met with a very violent and bloody end. And that's an incident I cover sort of later in the book. And it's not well known. And for all of the big-time, you know, lawmen and gunmen I cover, there's actually quite a number of these sort of domestic quarrels that turn bloody and sort of fatal love triangles that I get into. And those accounted for quite a number of slayings.
I was watching the movie as you were describing it, the movie that you haven't made yet. I could just see this scene playing out and all these people firing into a set of buildings and wiping out wrong people.
Samuel, you think he's trying to send you a message?
Oh, no. Sam knows what to do with this stuff or not if it happens. But I'm just saying I could see that scene. All right, we got one more to go, and we're almost done here. Manny Clements' murder. We got about 3 minutes for that.
Yeah, well, I'll make it quick. I'll just sort of tease it for anyone that's interested in reading the book, but kind of one of the last sensational murders I cover in El Paso is the death of Manny Clements. Manny Clements is a big character in the book. He served as a lawman for many years in El Paso. He was John Wesley Hardin's cousin. Spent his later years as the Precinct 1 constable, the same job John Selman had years earlier. Very popular lawman in certain circles. Had a good reputation. Made a name for himself apprehending fugitives that would come to El Paso from other areas. But then in 1908, he experienced a really sudden downfall. He was arrested for armed robbery and prosecuted for that. He had served as a character witness for another murder suspect that went to trial. That and his armed robbery case sort of sank his political career, and he lost his election that November. And in December of 1908, he was killed at the Coney Island. The story is that he knew quite a bit about the Chinese smuggling of Chinese laborers in violation of those really unfortunate exclusion acts, and was sort of seen as a threat to some of his sort of colleagues and buddies that were involved in that. And that's probably what got him murdered. They did arrest somebody and tried that person for Clemens' slaying. That person, of course, was later acquitted. So in a sense, it's sort of an unsolved case. But it was a big event in 1908, early 1909, and that's sort of where I transition out of that old gunfighter era and into that modern era.
It's amazing. So it's amazing that the lawmen who were also bad men, you know, that was like,
oh, sure.
All of them had that background. I mean, Clemens, that's the reason Hardin came to El Paso.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, Clemens, and of course his father had been a gunfighter and had died violently. Clemens had been involved in a number of violent incidents. I mean, he was not the gunman that John Wesley Hardin was, or his in-law Jim Miller was by any means, but he was still a dangerous man,
but
a very, astute political player. And he made a good career for himself there for a while, in El Paso. And you're right. A lot of these folks, spend time on both sides of the law.
Yeah. Wrestlers and, like I said, gunfighters and just, bad guys.
Can I say something stupid here? But no relation to the saint who had a church here.
St. Clement.
I told you it was going to be stupid.
Yeah, no relation.
None at all. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Well, Sam, I thank you for putting up with us here for the day. You've got an interesting set of things you do, the books you write, the videos you end up producing for other people and the History Channel and all that. So, yeah, obviously I'll pitch you one more time. Don't forget us. I mean, we got so many movies.
This is great, and what you folks do, I listen to your other broadcasts. What you folks do, Jackson, Melissa, is just fantastic.
Thank you.
I love your show. And just a quick shout-out again to some folks there. Claudia Rivers and the staff at the Special Collections Library at UTEP.
They know what they're doing.
The folks at the Border Heritage Center at the El Paso Public Library. Harry Kirk and some of the other former lawmen there in El Paso that were such a help to me.
This has been fun, Sam.
You just have such a great community.
Thank you much.
Thank
we're
you
done
so much.
Here for the day. Thanks for being with us. Next week, we're coming back and talking about the grape history in El Paso. Join us there for a glass of wine. Never can tell how that's going to turn out.
It'll be early in the morning.
Sam, thanks again. And Andrew Polk in the control room.
Thank you, Samuel.
Thank you very much for what you do. He has a talk show Monday through Friday at 5.
Yes, he does. Very good one.
5. See you then.
To the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Monterey Asset Management, Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM El Paso.